From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Thinking sideways.
I don't understand.
Does not compute.
You never know.
Insufficient data to formulate a reply.
What?
Stories of things we simply don't know the answer to.
Hey guys, welcome to another super exciting episode of Thinking Sideways, the podcast. I'm Devin, joined as always by
Joe
and Steve.
And we're going to tackle another unsolved mystery.
Cool.
Steve's super unhappy about it.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, I'm apologizing in advance. You know, there's been a whole lot of talk about JonBenet Ramsey. That's how you say that, right? JonBenet?
Yeah. I believe so.
JonBenet?
I think it's JonBenet.
JonBenet Ramsey lately. And I think it's mostly because of that AMA that happened. but we're not ready to tackle that one, if ever. I mean, probably we will at some point. But it's huge, and we want to, you know, get some experts and do it right. More a la Jeff Davis 8 sort of situation. But instead I will bring you something equally tragic. Yay.
Well done.
Yay.
That is honestly, I think, a little more interesting than the JonBenet Ramsey mystery.
It is a strange little tale.
It's strange. It's really strange. We're gonna talk about the disappearance of Madeline McCann, and a few points of order before I start. One is that this is one of those stories that Steve hates that deals with missing little kids. So if that's not your cup of tea, it's not in particularly gory or anything like that. It's just a missing kid. But if that's not your cup of tea, this is one to skip.
So I can skip this?
No, you cannot.
Oh, come on. I don't want to help.
Nope. You got it. This is part of the deal, Steve.
Fine.
We do the ones I don't want to do.
Fine. I'll help, but I'm not going to like it.
Yeah, I know you won't. It's okay.
Well, you got to solve this one, guys.
Yeah.
For the sake of the family.
Also, this was a recommendation from Johan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think late last year, I called dibs on it. I'm sorry, it's taken me so long to do it. I'm sorry.
Thanks, Johan.
Okay, you guys ready?
Sure.
Sadly.
Steve is not.
Nope.
Cool, sorry. Madeline McCann was born in May of 2003 to Kate and Jerry McCann. They were both physicians, and they also had a set of twins that were younger than Madeline. She was born in... Leicester.
Is it Leicester? I think it's Leicester, isn't it?
I think it's Leicester.
The good news is we've been getting a lot of feedback about mispronouncing stuff. And
sorry. Because we're really good at that?
Sorry. It's going to happen a lot in this episode. But also, let's be fair, it's just the way we pronounce it in America sometimes. Some of this stuff is just the way we say it here. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so they lived in, oh my gosh, how did we say it?
Leicester.
Leicester?
It looks like it should be Leicester, but I think it's pronounced Leicester.
Okay. And then in May in 2007, the McCanns went on holiday to Portugal with a group of family friends and their children as well. The adults of this group eventually became referred as the Tapas Seven.
And I think they were the Tapas Seven were not didn't include the McCanns, right?
No, it did.
It did.
No,
it
I thought there were nine people in the group, and the Tapas Seven were the seven friends of the McCanns.
No, you're right.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. You're right.
Yeah, okay.
I'm the storyteller here, and I can't remember
Small point.
Sorry,
yeah.
Point of order. So May 3rd was the last day of the trip. We're just going to delve right into the story. It's a long one. I'm sorry. This is going to be one of those ones you have to listen to me talk for a while.
Damn it. The way you drone on.
I know. I'm sorry. It's just like, wah, 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 wah. So May 3rd was the last day of this trip, and the group was staying at a resort called something that Joe's going to have to pronounce for me.
Well, I'm probably going to mangle it, but I think it's Praia da Luz.
That sounds right. Yeah.
I don't know.
There were eight kids that were part of the group, and they spent much of their day at the kids' club in this resort. That morning, while the Tapas Seven took a walk, the kids played in the kids' club. And then after lunch, the families headed to the pool where the very last known picture of Madeline was taken. After the pool, the kids went back to the kids' club until about 6 p.m.
I'm guessing that was probably checkout come get your kid.
You know, I don't have that sense. I have the sense that kids could stay as long as they wanted just because of some stuff that happens a little bit later in the story.
Yeah.
But at resorts like that, typically you could drop your kids off if you're going to have dinner, say. Which would be like a safe alternative to some of the things that happen in this story.
Yeah, I kind of wonder why they didn't use the little daycare center.
Yeah, that's my sense. I could be wrong. I know that when I worked on the cruise ship, we had that. And I think a lot of resorts offer that sort of thing.
It would make sense.
Yeah, kind of almost 24/7 care for kids. Not 24/7, but almost.
Got it.
Yeah, if you want to party the night away, though, yeah.
Yeah, you may as well drop your kids off.
Hell yeah.
Anyways, Jerry had a tennis lesson at 6, so Kate picked up the kids and hung out with them for a little while and, you know, fed them and bathed them and all that stuff. And then at about 7, she and Jerry. Oh my gosh.
Jerry.
This is like Parks and Rec up in here. I'm so sorry.
Pretend there's a J instead of a G in his name.
Sorry. Jerry and Kate, the mom, put their three kids to bed in the room that the kids were sleeping in. It wasn't the room they were all sleeping in. It was the parents had the one room, and then
it was an apartment.
Yeah. And the kids had one room they were all sharing. The two little ones were in a crib set up next to a single bed that Madeline was staying in. Madeline was wearing pink Eeyore PJs and cuddling with her pink blanket and pink cuddle cat.
She really liked pink. Huh?
She liked pink. She's a three-year-old girl.
What is Eeyore, by the way?
Eeyore?
Yeah.
From Winnie the Pooh?
Oh, okay. You know, it's been so long since I've read Winnie the Pooh. I mean, I've forgotten about Eeyore.
We're not even going to go into that.
No, That's a different mystery.
It's been a long time.
Yeah. Because nothing ever bad happens to upper middle class white folks that are at a resort. The Tapas Seven and the McCanns followed their typical evening routine, which was leaving their kids in an unlocked room and having dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tapas. Which is where Tapas 7 comes from.
In retrospect, yeah, it does seem like a bad idea.
Maybe not a great idea. They were about 160 feet as the crow flies away from the apartment the McCanns were staying in. It's 5A, which apparently, according to Kate, was about a 30 or 45 second walk. I'm having a really hard time figuring out how this place was set up, but sure.
Yeah, that's one of the things I'm surprised at, is that for all the stuff that's been written on the internet about this, nobody anywhere has a layout of the resort.
Yeah, I did a lot of looking for that, and I couldn't find a single one.
Yeah.
I've got to guess that it's one of those places where the restaurants and everything are centrally located, and all the apartments are splayed around them in kind of an arc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, although
allow everybody relatively straight access. That's a guess.
The description that I heard was that they were on the other side of the pool, so I don't totally know how this whole thing was set up, but they had reserved this specific table that was close to their rooms for 8:30 p.m. for the entire time that they were on holiday. And the way that Kate reserved this table, again, because nothing bad ever happens to upper white middle class people, was she wrote a note and just left it on the front desk where like anybody could have seen it.
Mm-hmm. And this is indicative of a bunch of things that seem innocuous to anybody who's doing them until something like this happens.
That's fair.
And you start, and all of these silly little things that you think nothing of start cropping.
These little red flags that, you know, you can look back on and say, well, that was dumb. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
That you don't even think about in the moment.
Yeah. But she said, in the note, she said, what? I want this table so I can watch my kids in apartment 5C.
She said, we're part of a group that are all in this block of apartments. We've got kids with us that will be in bed. So we want to reserve this table that's the closest one for 8:30 every night for the time that we're here.
Oh, I see.
And I remember something about, she had written some of this, or at least the request, I want to say it was in a guest book. Is this right?
Yeah.
So it wasn't just a post-it note. It was in the book that anybody walking by could have read.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
Just making sure.
Yeah.
So probably another guest who signed in right after them.
Always possible.
Yeah.
As mentioned, they did this every night. This was what they did every night. So it was a strong pattern. And had somebody been planning anything nefarious, it would have been a fairly easy thing to plan because they knew exactly what was going to happen at 8:30 every night. Oh, and also, as a fun side note, because the patio was closest to the restaurant,
This is what drives me nuts.
Yeah, they left the patio door unlocked because it only locked from the inside. They left it closed, but they left it unlocked. Instead of, you know, adding the extra whatever 10 seconds to walk around to the front and use your key and at least kind of safely have your kids in a locked apartment.
Seems like a better idea.
Again, it's one of those little red flags, right, that you would think, I would think as a not parent who doesn't have to deal with kids all the time, I would think I would absolutely lock them in that apartment.
Sure, I would too. But
I can see this. I can see my parents doing something like this in the late 70s, mm-hmm. early 80s,
yeah.
when people didn't have bad things happen all the time that they knew about. Not to say that bad things didn't happen, but when everybody is so security conscious, it shocks me. And the only thing that I can think that prompted this is a bit of what you were alluding to, which is they come from a very comfortable, safe place.
Yeah.
So those simple security steps just don't seem necessary.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the only way I can rationalize this.
And you're in a fancy resort too. You have people would typically expect things to be safer conditions there, right?
Yeah, but it's not. The sense that I have is that the patio opens out into a street, or at least an alleyway.
Now,
the
patio, I thought the patio doors were visible from the Tapas restaurant. They weren't?
They were.
But just because it's visible
doesn't
mean you're staring at it the whole time.
No, not at all. But
and it's a row of patio doors. So, you know, the person that's in the apartment next to you may be coming and going out of the patio doors and you can't necessarily tell the difference, right?
Yeah, I suppose it's dark and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, how many times have you been out at a restaurant on a patio in the evening and had a conversation and dinner with people and never noticed the jillion people that walked by across the street?
Mm-hmm.
You're focused in front of you, not really far away. Not to say that they're bad parents and they weren't watching, but you can't watch that continually.
No, yeah. you would think they'd be like kind of keeping an eye on it, though.
You would. You'd think that.
Would think that, wouldn't you?
I would. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To their credit, the parents did take shifts on checking on the kids, you know, because all of the parents, it wasn't just Madeline's parents. I'm going to call her Maddie. I've seen it a couple times. It's not always there, but I am going to call her Maddie, just so you guys know.
Same, no problem.
It's the same thing. I'm not adding a new character. Don't worry. Maddie's parents weren't the only ones who left a kid unattended. As I said, there were 8 kids in total, and they were all left in their rooms. And I think they all, as far as I can understand, had unlocked patio doors and
they were all doing the same.
They were all kind of doing the same.
Well, there's
thing.
5 other children besides the McCanns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they had the twins and then Madeline. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Jerry carried out the first check at 9:05 p.m., which was, you know, about a half hour after they left him alone. He said that he thought that he had left the door to the kids' room only slightly open at maybe a 5 or 10 degrees openness
angle.
Yeah. But when he checked on them, the door was wide open. He pulled it back to be almost entirely shut after, you know, glancing in on them and then returned to dinner. And then at 9:15, another one of the top of 7, Jane Tanner, went to check on her kids. She said that she passed Jerry on the way back to check on her kids. You know, like I said, it was that alleyway streetway they would have both had to have walked on to get to their apartments. And he said that he had stopped to chat with another vacationer on his way back. And the oddity here is that neither Jerry nor the other man saw Jane Tanner. And the street was apparently pretty narrow.
It sounds more like it's an alley than a street to me.
Yeah, that's kind of my sense. It's like an alleyway. It's not, yeah, it's an alleyway basically. But it's a fair, you know, it's a street that people take to walk and things like that. It's not, I mean, like a weird dead end alleyway or anything.
Right, it's not full of dumpsters and
yeah.
rats and all
yeah.
of that.
It's just more of a walkway than it is a... Anyway, so that's a little odd that they would have not seen her.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's unlikely that she could have just passed them without them noticing or anything like that. Anyways, Tanner said that she saw a man with a child in his arms cross the street just ahead of her. We'll get more on that later, but she checked in with her kids and then returned to dinner. At 9:30, Kate had intended to check on her kids, but one of the top of seven, said that he was going to go check on his kids, so he'd look on in on theirs too, because, hey, the door's unlocked, so he can just peek in, no problem. It's important to note that these checks weren't necessarily to make sure that... They were the kind of checks you do when you've got kids who maybe wake up in the middle of the night and start playing when they're not supposed to. Not the kind of checks that you do when you've left your apartment unlocked in a weird place.
And you're paranoid about your kids getting stolen.
Yeah.
Well, and I've got to say, initially, that's what I took from when Jerry said, well, I swear I shut that door and then it was open.
Mm-hmm.
That was my initial reaction, is that Madeline must have gotten up.
Yeah, maybe she had
something.
To use the bathroom or
that's
something.
That's what I was thinking, too.
Yeah.
I mean, not to pull us off track, but just...
No. I mean, I think that's a very easy thing, and we should definitely keep that in mind, that you've got a kid who's probably pretty potty trained at that point, you know, may wake up in the middle of the night, have to go to the bathroom, is not going to close the door all the way, you know, all of that sort of stuff. It's unlikely that she would have woken up just a half an hour after they'd put her down. But I guess she had been asleep for about an hour and a half at that point.
Yeah.
So she may have. You know, we do need to keep
it's
that in mind.
It's completely
possible. Sure. Absolutely. But as I said, it's important to note that this is the kind of check you do to make sure your kid isn't, like, up and playing. Matthew Oldfield was the one who was one of the top of seven. He was the one who did this check.
Oh, in place of
Kate.
For Kate, yeah.
Yeah, and he said that he didn't hear any noises coming from the room, but the door was, once again, wide open, so he pulled it shut without looking in the room, right? Because he didn't hear a kid playing or, you know, making noises or anything in distress, so he just thought, oh, they're fine, they're sleeping, I'm not going to bother to actually look.
Mm. When Jerry went earlier and pulled the door shut, did he actually look to see if the kids...
He said that he saw the kids.
Okay.
Yeah, he said that he looked and that Maddie was in her bed at that time.
Okay.
But that's what he said.
Yeah.
In fairness. At about 10, Kate did actually do another check. She entered through the patio doors and noticed that the door to the kids' room was once again wide open. And when she attempted to close it, it slammed shut on her like there was a draft in the room, maybe. A note, again, to mention that it seems unlikely, had the door not slammed, Kate would have actually looked in the room.
She didn't look in the room?
Well, I don't think she was planning on it. I think it was kind of like when Jerry did his, or I guess it was when Matthew did his. She just went to close the door. She didn't seem to actually look in the room.
Now, that's kind of inexplicable.
Okay, well, why in the hell are you going to look at in your apartment at your kids if all you're doing is to go in and stand and go...
And listen.
I don't hear anything. Wouldn't you just peek in, see if they're there... You know, and then wander back? Because isn't that why you're going to check on them?
You want to make sure they're not getting into trouble, not to make sure that they're there.
Okay.
I don't have kids, and I haven't
ever dealt with young children. But to me, it would seem logical, if I'm going to go make sure they're up, I'm just going to look in and make sure that somebody's not just sitting there fidgeting and is actually asleep.
So, yes, I agree. Every time I've ever taken care of kids, overnight or otherwise, if they're supposed to be sleeping, I will actually put eyes on them.
Yeah, there's that. But also, doors slamming on their own like that, doesn't that raise suspicions right there?
Well, but that's why, right? That's what I'm saying, is that I'm just making the note that she saw the doors open and she thought, oh, I will close that door. And she went to close it and it slammed. So she opened it up and realized that Maddie wasn't there anymore.
Mm. Oh, she opened it. Okay.
Yeah. After it slammed shut on her. I was just mentioning that it seems that her intention was simply to close the door. And
once
had it
again,
not slammed, I don't know that she would have opened it.
Yeah.
Not to, you know, be libeling anybody, no. But it doesn't seem like she would have.
No, it seems like her intention was to make sure there was no noise and then mm-hmm. get back to dinner.
Yeah. On the bed was Maddie's cuddle cat and blanket, but not Maddie. And Kate ran back to the restaurant screaming.
Oh, no. And the window was open, correct?
The window was open.
And the window had a security shutter, correct?
I don't know if it was a security shutter, but it was a shutter.
Mm-hmm.
The pictures I've seen, because I've seen pictures of the shutters, they look like they're just shutters. They don't look like they're security measure of any kind.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so Kate ran back to the restaurant screaming, "They've taken her." Of note, right? Mm-hmm. She's screaming, "They've taken her."
Yeah.
Whoever they are.
Yeah. And then at 10:10, Oldfield, Matthew, the guy who did the check right before Maddie was taken.
Earlier check, yeah.
Or maybe she was taken, who knows. Was sent to reception to have the resort call the police. And at 10:30, the resort activated its, quote, missing child search protocol. The staff of about 60 people looked for Maddie until about 4:30 a.m. And apparently, at first, everybody kind of thought that Maddie had just woken up and wandered off.
Mm-hmm.
That's understandable.
Good reason to lock your kids in the apartment.
Yeah, it is understandable. However, it created some problems.
Yeah.
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 Two National Guard officers showed up at 11:10 p.m. They searched briefly, but soon decided, oh, hey, actually, we need the criminal police here. So the criminal police were alerted, and they arrived at about midnight.
And this is the National Guard. These guys are Portugal
yeah,
National
Portuguese
Guard.
Yeah, National Guard.
Okay.
And then at about 2 a.m., two patrol dogs showed up, and then not until 8 a.m. did four search and rescue dogs show up.
Yeah, these are dogs with sensitive snouts, right?
Yes. The patrol dogs, I think, are just kind of to smell. I don't have a good sense on what they're good
they're
for.
They're a canine unit.
Yeah, they're
it.
Just canine units. Yeah, but
yeah,
then the search and rescue
somebody,
dogs,
you know?
The search and rescue dogs would have been meant to smell, but, you know, not until 8 a.m.
Yeah.
And this is where we encounter the biggest problem of this case, really, is that everyone other than the Topaz Seven and the McCanns seem to have thought that Maddie just woke up and wandered off. So the area wasn't treated like a crime scene at all. In fact, about 20 people accessed the room that Maddie had been taken from before it was closed off, thus probably ruining almost all of the evidence that would have existed. The room was never actually secured, and though it laid empty for about a month after the abduction, the resort rented the room out before forensic evidence was taken in August. This room was rented out before forensic evidence was taken.
Kind of muddies the trail, yeah.
Let me ask a question that I think you might have answered, but how long was it before the cops decided this was something other than a wandered off kid?
I think it was at 2 a.m. when the dogs arrived. They decided.
And it took them over a month to get their forensic guys in there?
Yeah, they actually had some fingerprints taken the day after, but you can see the picture. You should look it up online.
Oh, yeah, there's stomps. People were trooping through there like mad.
Oh, no, the guy who was taking fingerprints wasn't wearing gloves.
Uh-huh.
He was dusting for prints without gloves on.
This is a... Okay, that wasn't the phrase I was going to use. It's a crap show,
mm-hmm.
is what it is.
It is.
It's a cluster.
Yeah, a bit of a cluster.
Good Lord.
Oh, wait. Okay, so it gets better.
Are you sure?
The exterior of the building wasn't cordoned off at all, right? So there was a crowd that showed up that was walking all over the area that the abductor, if there was an abductor, would have taken, like, from the window.
If he'd gone out the window, then, yeah, there would have been footprints
Yeah,
there.
So
yeah.
They all stomped all over that. Also, it wasn't until 10 a.m. that police put up roadblocks. And let's be fair, right? If you've taken a child and you're about to beat feet out of town, it's not going to take you 12 hours. You're going to do it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So putting roadblocks up 12 hours after a kid has gone missing, not so helpful. Furthermore, it took Interpol 5 days to issue a global missing persons alert.
Well, that's awesome.
5 days.
Mm-hmm.
You can fly anywhere in the world in 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Easily.
In a day.
In a day. in 12 hours.
Yeah.
Not really in 12 hours, but, you know, that gives you ample time to cover your tracks and cover your tracks and cover your tracks. You know, you get on a plane, you get on another plane, you take a car, or whatever.
Or as simple as you drive out of town, you drive to another town, you hang out for a day, you go to another town. Mm-hmm. By the time they come through, this trail is ice cold.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I doubt that this guy actually got on a plane with his with a stolen kid.
I suspect not.
No. I suspect he probably lived in Portugal and just drove on home where he had a basement, you know, with chains in the walls and all kinds of
shit.
Yeah, I know.
As you can imagine, the media grabbed onto this one pretty quick, obviously. And as you kind of want that to happen with missing persons reports like this, because the more that missing child's face is out there in the world, the more likely it is that somebody's going to see, you know, if the kid is out in the world, the more likely it is that somebody's going to see that kid and think, oh, hey, I know I've seen that kid before. I'll call the police and report that I saw that kid.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same reason that you send out Amber Alerts in America.
It's a good thing.
Right? You know, we get Amber Alerts sometimes for, you know, abducted or missing children three states away because who knows, they might be there. Who
and
knows,
Amber
that car might have made
it
here.
Super effective.
They're really effective.
They're highly annoying because, yeah, it's from several states away, or it, you know, they say it was a white Subaru and every guy in a white Subaru is getting pulled over by the cops, so they're angering a lot of people, but they have good results.
And besides which, I hate people that drive white Subarus, so I think that's a good thing.
Well, no, but, I mean, I think that Steve brings up a good point, is that because the media did grab onto this so quickly, there were a lot of sightings reported. You can look at pictures of Maddie, and with the one exception of a very outstanding feature, she kind of just looks like a very cute little white girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She does.
Nothing remarkable, yeah.
Well, there is one remarkable thing.
Yeah.
And I think that we'll talk about that in a second instead of talking about it now.
Okay. Right. Sounds good.
Actually, no, let's talk about it now.
Okay.
This is the posters that circulated in Portugal. I was hoping to find a good picture of to use as the photo for this mystery, but there aren't any really good pictures of it. But the slogan was "Look," because Maddie, in her right eye, Steve's making a little thinking face, in her right eye has a tear in her iris that makes it look like she just has...
It's a discoloration.
It's a discoloration.
Looks like a black stripe.
It looks like a black stripe through her eye.
Yeah.
Iris, not, you know, full eye, but through her iris. And that's very distinctive. That's not something you can hide.
No.
That's not
something that you can fake.
Oh, no, not at all. Although it's not something that a witness is going to really notice from more than, you know, a couple of feet away.
That's true. But that was the campaign was "Look."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? It was.
And it, actually the O's were looked like her eyes because it, you know, if she was out in public, all you had to do is look in her eyes and you see that and you're like, oh, hey, I know what that kid is. So that's fair. But it is true that, you know, as long as you keep even her eyes hidden or, you know, whatever, it's pretty easy to conceal.
Mm.
It's not like, you know, half of her body was a birthmark or something.
Yeah.
She was a tattooed 3-year-old. That wouldn't happen.
That'd have been weird.
Yeah. So here's another thing. Aside from the weird handling of the crime scene, in Portugal, they have anything that's a criminal investigation.
Yes.
Is constrained by what's known as a secrecy clause, which means that there are no official updates or press conferences or suspects or witness names or anything, which is a problem.
Yeah.
One journalist was quoted as saying it created a leak system instead of a watertight system, which I think is probably true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's if the media is scrambling for any details, they're going to offer money to get those details. And, of course, a cop who's got, you know, an okay wage, well, you can just make a couple of bucks on the side.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a detail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Maybe that's,
that's why.
Maybe the police actually, like, supported the passage of this thing just so they could make a little money on the side.
It made the whole thing a freaking media circus, though, was the problem.
Well, mm-hmm. Actually, it's interesting to me. The McCanns, you may or may not know, if you know the story, you know, the McCanns were like suspects. They still are suspects in a lot of people's minds. They've officially been cleared, but again, we're not there yet. But one of the biggest, weirdest reasons to me that the Portuguese police deemed the McCanns to be suspects is because they refused to honor this silence code and did talk to the media. And because of that, the Portuguese police said, oh, well, clearly you're suspects because you're trying to hide something. They accused them of turning the investigation into what Steve said, a media circus.
And that's just a different cultural approach to the whole situation is what it is.
It's a different cultural approach, but it's also, you know, of the things that the McCanns did, this is one of the ones I understand the most.
Sure.
Because if your kid goes missing, you want her face freaking everywhere.
Absolutely.
Everywhere. And how do you do that? The media. And turns out, actually, this media circus was so large that photos of Maddie were literally the most reproduced image of the decade. That is not a lie. That is an actual statistic. Huh. Photos of Madeline McCann were the most reproduced image of the decade.
What was number two?
I don't know. I would assume something to do with, like, 9/11 or something. I don't know.
Yeah, or something having to do with nudity.
Yeah.
Celebrities, but yeah.
In July of 2007, and as a side note, this case moves so slow.
Yeah, it's still they're still investigating this.
In May, May 3rd.
In 2006.
2007.
2007? Oh, is it 2007?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In May of 2007, early May, May 3rd, 2007 is when she disappeared. So in July of 2007, somebody thought, oh, hey, you know what we should do is get some sniffer dogs from Britain. Let's bring them over. Maybe they'll be able to find something. Which is a good idea. Should have happened earlier. I don't know that sniffer dogs are so good that they could do anything a few months later, but sure.
Yeah.
Why not?
It's like, I mean, so many other scents and people have trampled over the crime scene and everything else.
Yeah.
How can they possibly do anything?
One of them named Keela was trained to alert to traces of human blood. And the other one, Eddie, was what's called an enhanced victim recovery dog, which basically alerts to human cadavers. And it should be noted, they can't alert to specific cadavers and specific blood, just the presence of human blood or decaying human bodies.
They're dogs.
And there are some dogs, you know, bloodhounds can trace the scent of a human being living, you know, within a couple hours and things like that. These are not that kind
of dogs. These are search dogs.
They're identification dogs. They can alert to the presence of blood. And ostensibly, at that point, somebody can take a sample of that area and test it and then find what they can find from that. Hopefully. The dogs were taken to two beaches that were close to the resort, the house of one of the suspects and many of the apartments in the resort. The only place that the dogs gave alerts was in the McCann's apartment, 5A. Both dogs gave alerts.
So if the cadaver dog had, say, let's say if there had been a dead body in an apartment and it had been gone for 2 or 3 months...
It's my understanding that the dog would have been able to identify that.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, because it's a search. He's a victim recovery dog.
Mm-hmm.
So he ostensibly, I don't know. I keep saying ostensibly. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm given to understand that, and I could be wrong, but I think that he would have been able to smell any presence of cadaver.
Of dead body.
Yeah.
But the thing that's weird about that is that, I don't want to, like, stomp all over your story.
No, stomp away.
You know, some people, like, for example, the Portuguese police, for example, accused the McCanns of sedating Madeline and accidentally overdosing her and killing her. Another theory that they have is she died accidentally in an accident.
We're not there yet, but yeah.
And they tried to cover that up. The thing about it is, and of course, when you die, you're a cadaver right away.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't start smelling like a cadaver for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it takes a while for you to actually smell like a cadaver,
mm-hmm.
which is why this is, I have a little problem with the dog. I mean, I just can't figure out why this dog would have gone on high alert.
I agree.
Yeah.
In this situation, I agree. I think the thought of bringing him along was that, you know, they took them to the beaches and things like that.
Looking for a place where the body might have been stashed. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think the intention was for him to alert in the apartment, but he did.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Which is a little weird. You don't necessarily want there to be a cadaver dog saying, hey, there's the smell of a cadaver in your apartment.
Behind the sofa.
Could there have been a dead rat in the wall, maybe?
It's human cadavers only.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
There goes that.
Wow.
Ha, stomping all over your theory now.
I like the dead rat theory. I'm sticking with it.
Anyways, the dogs did both alert behind the sofa. That is an interesting point. Again, I don't know what that means, but it means something to some people. In August, again, this thing moves real slow. Seems like time would be of the essence to find a missing little girl, but fine, whatever. In August, the police took several items from the McCanns, both from when Maddie had been alive And after she disappeared, clothes, the cuddle cat, Kate had borrowed a Bible from one of her friends after the disappearance, things like that. Eddie and Kilo were put in a room with these items, and at least one of the dogs, possibly both of them, alerted to all of the items. It's not published which one did. It's possible both of them did. That's interesting, right? Because it's items from pre-disappearance and post-disappearance. The McCann's lawyers argue, I think maybe validly, although also maybe not validly, that because the McCanns were both physicians, they would have encountered dead bodies and blood in their line of work and therefore could have transferred it to those items.
Yeah, that's a very valid point.
I think it's a valid point, though I don't know why necessarily when you encounter blood in your workplace, you don't wash it off. Instead, you take it and put it, you know, on your kid's cuddle cat,
for instance. Yeah, you wipe your hands
on the cuddle cat. Yeah, sure, a kid, like, bleeds on it or something. I think that it's fair. I wish I knew which one alerted. I don't really want to go see a physician who's, like, dealing with dead bodies all the time.
Well, and the thing about it is when you're dealing with a dead body, you put on gloves and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, you're not necessarily going to go touch a Bible or, like, your disappeared kid's blanket.
Yeah, and also the a trace or two of blood is not a big... People cut themselves all the time. I mean, so the existence of blood is not necessarily sinister.
Which is why I wish I knew which dog alerted.
Yeah. I was just saying, because if it's the cadaver dog, that makes it even stranger. Yeah, because I agree. The dog that's going to smell blood, we can see very mundane reasons. But the cadaver dog... Being a doctor, if you have to occasionally go to the morgue, doesn't mean that you're covered in dead people's stank and then roll around all of your possessions carrying that.
Well, let's continue because it gets a little more interesting. I do have more information about some other stuff.
Okay.
Eddie and Kilo were then taken to an underground parking garage that had the McCann's car and another one of the suspect's car and then a lot of cars that weren't. Control cars.
Did the suspect car, did they police actually put that there?
Yes.
It wasn't just randomly parked.
No. They did like a lineup of cars basically for the dogs. And Eddie, the cadaver dog, alerted outside of the McCann's car and into the trunk of their car. And I couldn't even find if the McCann's had driven to their holiday or not. But the fact that a human cadaver dog would be alerting to anything around a car is suspicious and weird. There are, I do want to just go ahead and say, I have not seen these videos. I'm just taking on faith that this stuff happened. And there are some reports from some skeptics that say that the handlers can be seen directing the dogs to alert in these areas.
Oh, really?
But it's not tainting. Widespread. Those are not widespread beliefs, but... There are some, I want to make sure that makes it into this episode, that there is some speculation that the handlers are saying, oh, this is the McCann's car. Although I don't think that the handlers knew whose car was whose. It seems like it would be poor police work if you were going to do a lineup of cars and say, handlers, just so you know, these are the cars.
The suspect car.
Uh-huh.
So these folks are British.
Yeah.
So they would have had a car with a British license plate on it.
Mm-hmm.
Most likely, don't you think they flew there and rented a car?
Not necessarily, because it's actually... I know Spain is not that far away, and
they could have taken, like, a ferry.
Yeah. Well,
it probably would be cheaper to rent a car than take your car over on a ferry, really.
But let's just say they took their car.
Okay.
They have a car that has a British license plate. Now, this is, again, saying it's their personal car. Suspect. Was it a local?
Yeah, he was
a local. So he would have had a car with local license on it.
Yeah, and again, I don't know. I couldn't find out where this lineup was done because it was the British police that did the lineup, but I don't know if it was done in Portugal or where. This is one of those frustrations where I wish there was more information, but I can't find it.
I'm sure it's
in the original police reports, but I can't requisition those because this is still an open case.
It's still secret, but it sounds like, though, I mean, Eddie and Keila were flown to Portugal for this, for their investigation.
But I don't know if it was a rental car or their car. But again, I would say that a cadaver dog alerting outside of your car is not a great thing.
No, that would be bad news.
Even if it's just a rental, right?
Well, you know, if it's a rental, then probably the previous renter probably murdered somebody and, you know, stuffed the body in the trunk. And it's nothing to do with you.
Yep. Okay, fine. So whatever, fine. In August 15th, the Times reported that forensic evidence said that the blood found in the bedroom that Maddie had disappeared from was that of a man.
I don't think we had mentioned that there had been blood found there.
Oh, yeah, sorry. There was blood found there.
It was a man.
It was a man's. It was Keela had alerted to that blood as well. And that was a man's blood.
Obviously, there was a fight. There was a struggle. Maddie
there was
fought.
A struggle.
Yeah.
Yeah, she fought tooth and nail.
Yeah, she grabbed her K-bar knife and slashed. But,
There,
she kept it in Eeyore.
Yeah.
There was some DNA testing done, but I'm not really going to get into it because I've deemed it very unreliable. If you really, you should look at it if you want. They did a really controversial DNA test that's highly, highly sensitive. And the forensic scientists.
That was the stuff that was found in the car, in the trunk of the car.
Yeah. Right? And the forensic scientists that did the testing said it was super inconclusive. And the media said it was 100% it was Maddie's DNA.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not even going to go there because I trust those scientists way more than I trust the media.
Yeah, but you know, there's nothing unusual about her DNA being in the trunk anyway. Because I mean, when we were all kids, if we were bad and we were on a car trip, the parents would always just throw you in the
trunk.
I don't
feel like I need to know about your childhood, Joe.
Oh, okay, that didn't happen.
Joe, that's actually not normal.
No, it's not. No, not at all.
Holy crap!
Sorry, dude.
No, okay.
So, can we talk about suspects or theories or whatever? It's suspects this time, not theories. Can we talk about that?
Yeah.
Can we just go ahead? Cool. We're not going to talk about all of them. In 2013, the Metropolitan Police of London said that they had 38 persons of interest. So we are obviously not going to talk about all of them.
Please.
Nope, not going to happen. The first suspect or theory or something that we're going to talk about is the Tanner sighting. You guys remember Jane Tanner?
Yeah.
Don't make that face at me. Jane Tanner, yeah, she was one of the top of seven. She was the one who said that she totally saw Jerry talking to that dude, but neither of them saw her.
Oh, the reliable lady.
Yeah,
got
the totally reliable one, yeah.
But besides seeing Jerry, she saw a man.
Yeah, she said she saw a man carrying a child ahead of her when she was heading to check on her own kids. She said that the man was white, dark-haired, about 5'7", and of Southern European or Mediterranean appearance, 35 to 40 years old, wearing gold or beige trousers and a dark jacket, but she didn't see his face, so... I don't know how she knew all those things.
Yeah, well, we've talked about how reliable memory is before in cases like this.
Mm-hmm. And it was
in
dark.
Other words, it's completely unreliable.
Yeah, it was dark, but okay. So he apparently did not look like a tourist. He looked like he was a local. And she claimed that he was carrying a barefooted child who was wearing light-colored PJs with a floral print and ruffle cuffs. The description does match the PJs that Maddie was wearing at the time. That's fair. The police said that sighting was actually of another British tourist who was picking his kid up from the kids club and carrying her home. She had been sleeping. And in fact...
Oh, because like we talked about earlier, you could leave him there later.
You could leave him there, yeah.
Got it.
And they did the responsible thing when they went to dinner and they sent their kid to the kids club and had them sleep there while they were waiting for them to be done with dinner. But they actually did a reproduction of this scene. Eventually they found the man and did a photo shoot with him in the clothes that he was wearing that night, carrying his daughter in the PJ she was wearing, and it looks exactly like that.
So we basically just nipped that one right in the bud.
Yeah, the man actually later sued for libel against Jane Tanner and the media. It's generally accepted that this is a really bad theory.
How did he do in his libel suit against Jane Tanner?
He did pretty good. He won
against her.
He won against all of them.
Yeah, but she didn't libel him.
That's fair.
Yeah.
She didn't. But I think he won.
She saw what she saw.
Anyways, I mean, the even more important thing about this is that most people say that she didn't actually even report this until November 16th.
Oh, that's strange.
There are some other reports that say that she did actually report this immediately, but the police didn't really reveal the information until late May. And I couldn't figure out which one was true. The more widely spread one is that she didn't reveal this until in November. But again, I don't know. I don't have access to the police reports. I also don't speak Portuguese, so I wouldn't be able to read them even if I did have access to them.
How about Google Translate?
It's really bad with Portuguese.
It's bad.
This is actually true. I used to have a friend who spoke Portuguese, and I could never actually translate stuff.
Yeah.
Anyways, The only reason that I thought this was interesting, or anybody thought this was interesting initially, was because they thought that maybe it gave a time frame for when Maddie went missing.
Because we don't really know exactly when.
No.
She was no longer in the apartment.
What's accepted now is that she was taken just like moments before Kate discovered that she was taken. And we'll talk about this more in a second.
Okay.
Actually, we're about to talk about it, but I just wanted to also mention, because Jane said that she saw the man at 9:15, but I don't think that was a good time frame. We're going to talk about the Smith sightings now, because there was another report of a man carrying a child. And this time it was by people who are not part of the Tapas 7, nor were they even staying at the resort, as far as I can tell. They were on vacation from Ireland. Their names were Martin and Mary Smith. Just talk about...
Those names. Weird couples.
Yeah. And apparently Portugal, like, super popular with people from, like, the British Isles and the UK. And, oh my gosh, I feel like I just, like, I'm going to get in so much trouble because I don't think Ireland is part of the UK or the British Isles. It's not. I think I might have just...
it's part of the Isles.
Gotten really offensive.
Portugal,
I'm sorry, everyone.
And Spain are indeed huge destinations for the British because, well, it's close, mm-hmm. it's cheap,
yeah.
and it's not wet and cold,
yeah.
which is what the UK is.
Yeah.
So that area is chocked full of tourists.
Yeah.
I'm sure it is. And by the way, I believe Ireland is part of the UK.
The United Kingdom?
Yeah.
Northern Ireland is?
Well, yeah, Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyways, it doesn't matter.
We'll cover that card.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Martin and Mary reported seeing a man at about 10 p.m. carrying a child towards the beach. It was an odd time to be doing that, but okay, fine, whatever. They thought that the girl was probably 3 or 4 years old. She was wearing light-colored PJs and had blonde hair and pale skin. The man, they said, was probably in his mid-30s. He was about 5'7" to 5'9". He was slim, had short brown hair, and was wearing light pants. They said that the man looked like he was a local and he didn't seem comfortable carrying the child. And I've always thought that these sightings could be the same man, but they cited this person. Cited?
Yeah.
Saw? They saw this person.
Cited is good.
Yeah. Further away than what, you know, the initial sighting 45 minutes later, he wasn't 45 minutes away. So it probably wasn't the same person unless he was just walking circles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got this kid. I took it from an apartment.
I don't know what to do with it.
I just keep walking in circles. Yeah, I don't see that happening.
So here's the thing that's interesting to me. And yes, I'm setting myself up for my favorite theory, in fairness. Both sightings, but particularly the EFIT images that were created from the Smith sighting.
EFIT?
Oh, okay. EFITs are electronic facial identification techniques. They're basically forensic drawings, but digital.
Oh, so instead of a sketch artist, you've got mm-hmm. a digital artist.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Exactly.
Makes total sense.
Yeah, they both look, that one particularly looks a lot like Jerry McCann to me. And I think Steve and I talked about this a little bit before we started recording. And I think what he has to say is fair. But I also want to mention that the chain of evidence is pretty good on this because Mary and Martin, as far as I can tell, hadn't seen Jerry prior to creating this EFIT sketch. And also, I don't think that they knew that Maddie was missing before they reported this.
When did they make this sketch?
This sketch?
Yeah.
It was like within a couple of hours, I think. I don't know for sure.
Okay.
But it's just, that's what I'm given to understand is that they hadn't seen Jerry.
Okay. Well, and this is what you and I were talking about earlier is Jerry is not a super unique looking individual. He's mm-hmm. got yeah. a very common set of facial traits. And the guy that's in this EFIT matches the appearance of about a half dozen people at my office.
But also matches Jerry.
Somewhat.
Somewhat. See, and that's the perfect point. Joe just hit it on the head. Somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not as if it's a dead ringer.
Well,
yeah. And I understand that
in
it's
fairness,
a sketch.
That EFIT could be a dead ringer for a lot of people.
Thank you.
No, it absolutely could, but it also could be a dead ringer for him.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, I think it's, yeah, it could
be. I just want to put that out.
Absolutely.
There.
Yeah. It could be a lot of people, but it could be him.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, definitely. But there's a lot of differences when you look at it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the jawline, the eyebrows, they're way different.
Yeah, that's true.
Hairline's a bit different.
Yeah. I mean, again, you know, it was dark.
Yeah, true that.
I guess it's interesting, you know, and Jerry was at the restaurant. Almost everyone who placed him there, however, was part of the Tapas 7. And servers wouldn't have really noticed. I don't think that servers really notice when somebody is away from the table for a long period of time. You know, had he been going, getting up and checking on the kids, things like that, he could have been gone for a half an hour before anybody would have really noticed. I don't think that that's something that's tracked.
But, yeah, the Tapas 7, I'm assuming those people weren't covering up for him. If he disappeared long enough to go murder Madeline and dispose of the body and everything like that, you would think that people would have noticed that he's been gone for an hour or two.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But if you were going to, like, oh my gosh, we're going to get into the, like, stuff Steve doesn't like. But if you...
Yeah, that's what this look on my face is all about.
I see it. If she had died earlier and they placed her in her bed so that if anybody else were to check on her, it looked like she was sleeping and he were just going to dispose of the body quickly.
Yeah.
He would probably have time to do that. He wouldn't have time to, you know, create a whole thing, but he probably would have had time, especially because there's a little bit of weird unaccounted for time.
Mm-hmm. He would have had time to maybe go retrieve the body and put it in the trunk of the car.
Yeah. Or
for later disposal. But
yeah, absolutely. But,
are we going to talk about the whole theory that that Maddie might have died by an accident?
Yeah,
we will.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that later? Okay.
Yeah. All right. Absolutely, we will. The next theory suspect is the person who was the first suspect in this case, Robert Murat. Murat?
That works.
Murat is probably
Robert.
Better. Robert.
Bob.
I'm going to call him Robert.
Call him Bob.
He was a local property consultant, and he was, like I said, the first suspect. He lived about 150 yards from the McCann's apartment, so close by. He was a local. And it was the house he lived in. Sorry, he lived with his mother. The house he lived in was in the direction that Jane Tanner said that she saw a man walking, which is blah. He was an official interpreter until his interest was deemed a little too real.
What?
He offered to translate. He was fluent both in Portuguese and English.
Uh-huh.
So he offered to translate the statements that the Tapas 8 and all of that, all everybody had given. And I guess the British police decided that that was really suspicious.
The British police did, or the Portuguese?
Yeah, no,
police?
The British police decided it was really suspicious. Yeah. They mentioned, "Hey, that's a little suspicious," and the Portuguese police said, "Oh yeah, it is a little suspicious, huh?" So they named him as a suspect.
He could have been. What's the word I'm looking for when you? He's a good Samaritan. He could have been just trying to be a good Samaritan.
Well, he says that his interest in the case was that he had recently lost custody of his 3-year-old daughter. And so his heart kind of went out to these people who had just lost their 3-year-old daughter, and he wanted to help as best he could.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which, well, it turns out was the Portuguese police verified that and said, "Oh my gosh, we're so sorry."
The other thing too is that he might have wanted some attention. I mean, in fact, getting involved in this case is possibly going to get your face, your picture in the newspaper.
Yeah, he might have. I think there are a lot of totally innocent reasons that he could have wanted to get involved in this case, but. 3 of the top of 7 said that they saw Robert around the apartment, 5A, at that time. But, he lived 160 yards away. Probably they did. Probably. Or they saw somebody who looked like him because his mom said that he was home all evening.
Okay, well, everybody knows your mom always covers.
Your mom's going to say, no, he was here.
I'm not joking. It's just
no, that's
that
true. It's
a mom's
true.
Automatic reaction in almost every case that we've ever looked at, or whether it be on this podcast or not, their mom always backs them because that's a maternal thing you do. You protect your child.
Of course. But the thing about it is that if he comes wandering on home with a 3-year-old girl in tow, and he's like, "Mom, I just kidnapped this 3-year-old girl, and she's going to be my sex slave," or something like that. Mom is probably not going to be down with that.
But no, if she says, not. "We now have a little girl to raise," Mom might be on board with that.
Maybe. But then again, you got to wonder, too. I mean, I guess she might be, but you would think that as a mother, she would recognize the tremendous grief that it would bring to the real mother of Maddie.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it would have been easy enough, you know, for her to just say, oh, yeah, no, we found her. But yeah. It doesn't matter because a huge search for evidence was carried out on the mom's house, you know, through the car. His car was the one that was the suspect car that the dogs sniffed at. Literally nothing was found. They like scoured the crap out of everything that he owned, every place he'd been, everywhere he lived. They called in character witnesses, all of that stuff. Nothing was found. They said, oh, oops, sorry, you're innocent. And eventually, you know, this happened to the McCanns too. The media pretty much just deemed him guilty for a while. And he sued a couple different media agencies for libel and eventually won more than $800,000 in good. Those suits.
That's
combined.
That's a hell of a winning.
It's a good winning.
Not bad. Yeah, good for him.
Yeah. So I would say I agree he's probably innocent.
I would say so.
Yeah. Now here's a thing I need Joe to...
pronounce?
Yeah. Say for me.
Christ, I don't know. It's been a long time since I took German, but I'm going Urs Hans von Eich.
That'd be my guess.
Yeah, okay.
There's a tenuous, incredibly tenuous link between this known pedophile and a possible abduction.
Now, he was not just a pedophile. He was a murderer, too,
He was a pedophile and a murderer, yeah. He lived in Spain, not very close to this Portuguese resort place. But I guess somebody thought, well, he has a pattern of abducting and murdering young girls, so... he might be in on it. He committed suicide in July of 2007 by shooting himself in the head after abducting a 5-year-old girl in Spain. I don't put any stock into this, but I did want to mention it.
Yeah, that just seems like that's just too easy. But...
I agree.
Well, anyway, if he's a pedophile murderer, probably a good thing he's dead, huh?
Yeah, I think
I just had
yes.
to editorialize a little bit.
I think that's
that,
maybe one of those things that most people can agree on.
Yeah.
In general.
Good thing he's not around anymore. Yeah.
It will come as no surprise. We've already discussed a little bit that the McCanns were also suspects.
Of course.
And because this episode's a little long already, and because there's just a lot to say, we're going to kind of just bullet point this thing. Of note, who leaves their kid alone in an unlocked room... in a strange country for like every night for the duration of your holiday after having left a note that everybody could see? Who does that?
Mm-hmm.
Really, who does that? Right?
Mm-hmm. I believe we called that red flags.
Yeah, red flags. Lots of little red flags. The other thing that people talk about a lot is they've taken her. The fact that Kate came running screaming they've taken her. Mm-hmm. And the Portuguese police actually said that they thought that Kate was setting up
an abduction.
Kind of setting the stage for an abduction story.
Scenario. Yeah.
Because I think this is really fair to say that most parents, when walking into the room and seeing your kid's gone, you're going to start screaming, she's missing.
Yeah.
Where the hell is my kid?
Right? Where's my kid?
She's gone. She's gone.
I can't find her. She's gone. You're not going to scream, they've taken her.
That's a little strange.
It's weird.
Although, again, it just depends on the account you read of this. Is that actually what she was screaming?
That's every account I've read says that.
No. Correct me if I'm wrong. I swear I also remember because the door slammed because the window in the bedroom that the kids were in was open, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Playing a little bit of devil's advocate here. She could have realized that her daughter was gone, looked over, saw the window was open, and made the immediate presumption, correct or not, that somebody had come in through the window and taken the child and left. And that's why she immediately started screaming,
They've taken her?
They've taken her.
Yeah.
And that would be reasonable.
Not necessarily meaning they've as in two or three people, but just
a person.
Unknown people.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think there's, you know, it's that both sides of that for sure. Again, it's the lots of little red flags. Kate also refused to answer 48 of the questions that the Portuguese police asked her. And she, in fact, said that the reason that she refused to answer them was because she was afraid they might implicate her.
Do we know what those questions were specifically?
No, we don't. And that's fair. I mean, that's another fair point, right? But I do think that that's weird. I can't think of, I mean, maybe you can. I can't think of a question that they would have asked her reasonably within those first, you know, it wasn't like, you know, 4 months later they were asking her questions. It was pretty early on. They're asking her questions. I can't think of a question that you would ask that, you know, 48 questions that you would ask.
I can.
Okay. Ask me.
What do cops do?
Yeah, but like,
walk through me with this. They ask the same question over and over and over in multiple ways. And she may have gotten fed up when they were saying, did you kill your daughter? Did you hide her somewhere? And she may have said, shut your bloody mouth. I'm not answering that. Screw off. This isn't helping. And they said, well, she refused to answer that question because she's obviously guilty.
That's possible. And then it's also, don't forget there's a language barrier here. So they're going through translators.
That's true.
So,
yeah, I guess, you know, the sense that I had was that she had flat out refused to answer 48 individual different questions. And her lawyers did say, oh, yeah, the reason she didn't answer those is because she thought they would implicate her. It wasn't the police later saying, oh, it seemed like she was scared that we were going to say she was guilty. Her lawyers actually came out and said, oh, yeah, the reason she didn't answer those is because she thought they would implicate her.
Well, I can see that in lawyers speak being they kept asking the same question, trying to get her to say something, the same answer different ways. Because cops do this all the time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You get them to explain, wait, run me through this scenario one more time. How many times have you watched a cop show where you'll see the cop say, now, I just need you to explain this to me one more time? Because they want people to say it in multiple versions to see if they can parse anything apart to find a detail that accidentally slips into the narrative. And again, if, like Joe said, this is going through translators, I can see how frustrating that is.
Absolutely.
May be the lawyer's like, yeah, she answered the question. She knew better than to keep answering it because they just keep doing this. They're trying to finger her for the whole thing.
I guess.
Again, I don't believe the parents, but I don't like this whole story in general, but right. I'm just saying.
I just don't think that even in lawyer speak, saying she thought the answers to those questions might implicate her means she, like, they kept asking her the same question. I think that a lawyer says to the public in a press conference says they kept asking her if she had murdered her daughter and she kept saying no. That's, you don't say she thought that it might implicate her.
No lawyer would say that.
I mean, was going to say,
you should be disbarred if you say that about your client.
Yeah, you can't say that, though, in an active, open investigation.
That's fair. You can't say, I don't know. I feel like you find a different way.
Yeah,
but yeah.
This whole unanswered question thing, we've beaten that to death.
Yeah, let's move on.
No pun intended.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
The sniffer dog reactions, that's a bullet point of this one. It's a pretty good one. We did already discuss a little bit the different ways that that could be interpreted. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, because I don't know which dog alerted to what, it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
The theories around the McCanns, they're mostly not nefarious.
Accidental.
They're mostly accidental.
An overdose.
In fact, Joe's, you know, kind of hit the nail on the head, as Steve would say, that what the Portuguese police originally thought, and then they said, no, that didn't happen. But I think a lot of people have held on to, and I honestly, my heart goes out to this theory a little bit because I can see where they were coming from, maybe, is that, you know, sometimes you've got a kid who's a little overactive and you're tired and you just want to enjoy your holiday. And
so you give the kid some heroin?
No, you give the kid some, like, Benadryl.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of Benadryl to try and calm them down, or a little bit of whatever sedative. They were both physicians, so they definitely had access to a lot of different kinds of sedatives or otherwise sleep aids of some kind that might have helped her relax or sleep. And we don't know if she was one of those kids who was, like, super hyperactive. She was excited to be going home. Who knows? But the theory goes that she was given a sedative and it was an accidental overdose. Though, again, they were physicians, so they probably shouldn't have accidentally overdosed her. But fine, whatever. She died. They freaked out and tried to cover it up.
Mm-hmm. I have no sympathy for this theory whatsoever. Because when your kid has had an accident, and is bleeding and unconscious. You think the kid is dead, but you don't know for sure.
You alert somebody and
you
try and
call the
them.
Ambulance. Same thing with an overdose. You call an ambulance.
Exactly. Yeah, and I actually was just talking. I was talking to somebody about this because that's what I do. I think you guys do this too. At least I know Steve does. I don't know if Joe does or not. Yeah. But when I'm working on a story, I'll talk to, you know, my significant other or friends about the story. And you were talking over dinner last night, and I said, but what you do, like, if an accident happened, you, like, find somebody. You know, you don't look at this, like, poor child of yours who's suffering on the ground and think, ah, crap, better cover that up.
Oh, damn, I got another body to hide.
You go, no, oh, my gosh, what happened? What have I done? I gotta, you know, and I guess it's possible that, right, she, like, died in her sleep, maybe. Maybe what happened was they gave her too much sedative, and they didn't realize, and when Jerry went to go check on them, he checked on them.
Or they
realized,
both gave her the dose, not realizing that the other had already done it.
Right. But what, you know, that they realized after the fact that she wasn't breathing anymore, you know, after they came back and he had to defy something. It's possible.
It's still,
but you still
gotta call an ambulance. And the thing about it is,
you revive that kid. You try and revive that kid. And it's understandable, I think, for you to kind of make the argument. It's, you know, it's not going to go super great for you, but your kid's not going to be dead.
Exactly. Besides which, you know, you don't have to make any arguments at all. How often, when I was a kid, my parents told me, look, all that stuff in the medicine cabinet, you don't go eating that stuff like candy because it'll kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, after that, they came up with childproof caps and stuff like that.
Right.
So, but the idea of a kid getting into some drugs and swallowing a bunch of pills, not realizing what he's doing,
or
and dying,
like liquid,
is not exactly outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
So you just say, you know, the kid.
There's a reason they came up with Mr. Yuck to put on everything.
Oh yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So you just say to the kid, you just say to the police, the kid got into these drugs, unfortunately, and OD'd. So please save my kid's life. We're sorry as hell.
Right.
Well, I mean, there was no crime.
Actually, yeah. You don't even have to go that far. You can say, I don't know what's going on. I'm a physician. She's unconscious, and it appears to be some kind of drug reaction, and I don't know what it is. And then they rush to the hospital, and then one of you, quote unquote, figures out that one of the pill bottles has been opened.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like, we're fleshing out a bunch, and we're really going down the rabbit hole here. But there's a million ways that that could happen.
But yeah, the point is that the McCann's suspects makes no sense to me, because if the kid had an accident, they would have called an ambulance. If the kid had OD'd, they would have called an ambulance. I just can't believe that they would have murdered their own kid.
And I guess that, for me, I totally agree, but for the red flag. You know, it's kind of that, it's that thing where had they not left their kid alone, had they seemed as they were more attentive, had all of these tiny little red flags led up to this thing, I would be way more willing to say, there's no way they would try and cover this accident up. Of course not. Any compassionate, caring parent wouldn't try and cover that up. But honestly, the story of the McCanns doesn't exactly paint a compassionate, caring parent picture. And again, I don't say that to disparage them, because
They still have their twins.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still raising those children. Those children are alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, they haven't murdered them yet.
I mean, they probably won't, but because so much of me wants to be able to say, yeah, I agree. It doesn't make sense, because it doesn't make sense. But a lot of the stuff they did doesn't make sense to me. And I don't have a good theory on this one. But I do think that of the likely suspects, they are the most likely. There are two little follow-up things here. One is that in 2008, May of 2008, about almost, you know, a year, a little more than a year after Maddie went missing, there was a note left on the doorway of the apartment that the McCanns had been staying in that said that Maddie's body had been dumped in a reservoir. And
which reservoir?
Yeah, it said the specific reservoir, but I can't remember the name off the top of my head. I'm sorry.
No worries.
It's in a language you don't know.
It's a language I don't know. But there was some research done in it, but it's basically brushed off as not valid, this claim.
They didn't drain the reservoir and look?
They did not.
Really?
There's also been a few sightings, quote-unquote sightings, of Maddie in Spain and Portugal, and they've mostly been with local families. you know, somebody will say, oh yeah, I saw this local family, but also one of their people they were calling their daughters was this pale blonde haired girl who looked a whole lot like she could have been Maddie. And I think it was Maddie, you know, so that's, a thing that's been happening a lot. It's been happening this entire time, honestly. So that's worth mentioning as well. Yeah, so that's kind of the story.
Well, maybe Maddie will find herself.
I sure hope so.
You know, because if she's, what, 11 now?
She went missing in 2007. She was
three. She was born in 2003, right?
Yeah, so she would have been four in 2007.
She had just turned four.
Okay, so she would be 11.
She was born in May of 2003. So she was three when she disappeared.
Yeah, so
she would have, yeah.
Yeah. So she's 11. She'd be 11 years old.
Yeah.
So imagine that, you know. I mean, so she's taken when she's three, and she's too young to really have much memory of anything. And so somebody snatched her and, say, adopted her because they wanted a kid, but
yeah,
they couldn't
have
a kid.
Yeah, she was a cute kid, too.
Oh, yeah, cute little kid. And so imagine you're this person, and you're being raised by these people who are your parents, and then you're reading this, and then you one day stumble across on the internet the story of Madeline McCann.
Mm-hmm. And they do age progressions every couple of years, and they publicize those. They have one of her when she was nine.
Yeah, and then you see all these pictures of her eyes, mm-hmm. and that weird anomaly in her eye.
Mm-hmm.
And wouldn't that be really
bizarre?
That'd
be surreal.
Wouldn't that
absolutely,
be?
Absolutely, yeah.
Hey, wait, that's
that looks
me.
Just like
that
me.
Might be me.
Yeah.
Well, I doubt that what you're suggesting is remotely a possibility.
Well, that's just me being wishfully thinking.
I
would prefer her to meet that fate.
Right on the outset, I'm going to say, this is going to sound terrible. I don't want it to be her parents.
Uh-huh.
I want it to be somebody else. But
yeah.
To be somebody else means very bad things.
Mm-hmm.
They all mean very bad things.
Because well, here's what I did, and I don't know if you... I didn't tell you to do this, is that I read some of the article, and then I couldn't stomach the article anymore. So what I did is I took it in the way that I could, which is I started going into research specifically just on abductions. And the stats are staggering as to likely what has happened, because there's two kinds of situations. There is a known person abduction, so that's, you know, an acquaintance or a family member.
Yeah.
Except none of those people are around. So then this becomes what's called a stereotypical kidnapping, which is by somebody that a child doesn't know. There's some very set things that happen at that point that didn't. A ransom wasn't put out.
Okay, well...
that we know of.
Well, we skipped over this part, but there were some people that were arrested for trying to exploit the McCanns to say that they had information about where Maddie was.
But that's exploitation. That's not specifically
that's fair.
Ransom.
That's fair.
That but, seems to happen a lot in cases like this. The
absolutely.
Last one we talked about, there was a situation like that,
but,
too.
But the things that normally happen is, if it's a stereotypical kidnapping, is the child is transported up to 50 or more miles away, which we talked about. Mm-hmm. Roadblocks. Hey, thanks, guys.
Yeah.
And then the child is either A, put into some kind of slavery scenario, and I'm not going to explain that, or is kept to be raised on their own. Okay, well, I'm hoping that is the one.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. All of these things, they tell me. I mean, I can go through this laundry list of stats. Things like, you know, 1% of kidnapped kids.
No, I don't want to hear those
stats. They never come back.
I don't want to hear those stats.
Within 3 hours, most of them are dead.
Yeah, I don't want
to. I mean, there's all this stuff. And all these numbers that I'm pulling, by the way, they're U.S. It's all from the FBI.
Yeah.
Because go figure. Because if a child is listed as abducted, it doesn't matter for what reason, the FBI will step in, and that's the Lindbergh law.
Kidnapping is a federal
crime. It's a federal offense.
So you got this stuff out of the Uniform Crime Report?
Well, I got it from from the FBI's website, and they have a bunch of PDFs that you can pour through, which are not nice things to pour through, but I did anyway.
No, I go out to the Uniform Crime Reports all the time, actually. They're quite useful.
Well, they're disturbing, though.
Well, yeah.
But here's my thing, is that if I want Madeline to have been abducted by somebody, to have been kept as that person's child, it means a woman would have been the one who did the abduction.
Well, unless somebody kidnapped for a woman.
Okay.
As a gift.
Primarily.
Oh, God, that's a weird thing.
Primarily,
to say. I'm so
sorry. When women do the abduction, it's because they want to have a child of their own. For whatever reason, lost a child, can't have a child, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. That's their primary motive. Mm-hmm. It's a very extremely low percentage of men.
Very rare. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do it for that reason. So, yes, a woman could have had talked a man into doing it, but that is a very low probability.
Now, a woman could have had a husband who you know, and they wanted to have kids.
Yes.
And she especially wanted to have it, and she was getting all Kathy Bates on him, and he's like, okay, yeah. I'll find you a kid.
But the point is, I hate this story because I feel so terrible for the parents because I am so absolutely positive that Patty's not alive anymore. And that's the reason that I hate these cases is that more often than not, the numbers don't support the probability of survival.
Yeah. No, it is most likely that she's not alive.
Yes. Yeah. I mean,
I hope she
it
is.
It sucks.
But, you know,
this is one of those ones that sucks. You guys stop suggesting these stories. Please, because you suggest them and we have to do them.
We only want happy stories, okay?
Can you just, like, no more weird missing kids? Please.
This is why I don't like these stories.
I know, but we have to do them.
I know we do, but well, I'm just going to take this stance right now is that the stats support what I unfortunately don't like
is the
writing on the wall.
And well, as a, you know, as a aside, not that they needed the money, but the McCanns have won a lot of libel lawsuits.
Serious bank.
They've won way more than Robert ever won.
But
they
also
have written books.
Making stuff up.
Oh, yeah. And we're sitting here on a podcast talking about all the red flags and how they could have totally accidentally killed their daughter. You know, but I think it sucks to be them, absolutely, because not only are they going through the pain of losing a child, they're also being accused of being horrible human beings.
It's kind of like Maura Murray's dad, you know. I felt the same way about him, you know. It's like the poor guy. He loses his daughter, and everybody on the internet's accusing him of being a murderer.
Yeah.
Christ.
But, you know, maybe just don't do suspicious stuff, you guys.
Yeah, because it's so easy to know. Okay, if my kid disappears today, what do I not do to look
Do you
suspicious?
Not make lists like that? Because I absolutely do.
Oh, yeah,
you
exactly.
You are such a weirdo.
Well, I do unsolved mysteries. Like, that's my thing. So I know what not to do.
See, no. Instead, I follow a very specific pattern every day. So it's very obvious what I do every day.
Also, I think maybe you just don't plan to have kids.
Well, that and I don't plan to do anything bad
to them,
or anybody,
anybody ever.
Yeah. Well, this is why we keep our identities a secret, though. If you haven't figured this out,
that's true. Yeah.
Exactly, because pretty soon the internet's going to be alive with rumors that we committed all these murders that we talk about on our show.
Oh, that's
and
awful.
So that's why we stay hidden.
Yeah,
yeah.
I can't wait to be at your kid's bar mitzvah.
So that's the end of this episode. I'm sorry, it was long. I know you guys really hate it when we do long episodes. If you want to see some of the research that I did for this episode, we'll put some links up. You can also comment on this story. You can listen and download as well, all on our website. That website is thinkingsidewayspodcast.com. I think that there's a link to merch and to donate and to do a survey there as well.
All in the right-hand
sidebar.
All
in the right-hand sidebar. You might also, you probably are actually listening to us on iTunes. If you are and you haven't already, leave us a comment and a rating. That's how people find us. You may be streaming us. I know a lot of you are also doing that on just a bunch of different sites. I don't know streaming stuff. I'm an Apple kid. I'm sorry.
Well, there's a gazillion out there.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
Find us on Facebook. Find us, friend us, like us.
Actually, you know, speaking of streaming, there's been a bunch of talk of which app to use streaming
on
the Facebook group. So,
yeah.
You know, join the group and then you can find out which ones are better than others.
Which
because some of them do actually cut us off.
Yeah, like Stitcher, for example.
Yeah,
that's annoying.
We're on Twitter, Thinkin' Sideways. Some cool activity there, I guess, a little bit. Some of it. Email thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com. Email us story ideas, thoughts about this episode, thoughts about other episodes, creative criticism, just fangirl fanboying.
Those are the best.
anything, yeah. Literally anything you want to say to us, you can email us. And if we don't like it, we'll just ignore it.
Pretty much.
That's pretty much it. Yeah, I think that's it. So as Steve would say, that having been said, I think we're going to get out of here.
Can we please?
Yes.
Yeah, it's time.
All right, okay. Bye, everybody.
Bye, ta-ta. Guys.